Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Sirvió para dividir, para aniquilar, y llegó al culmen de, hacia fines de los años 80, aniquilar la mayoría de los pueblos originarios, porque eran barbarie, y la civilización.
That is Pope Francis speaking earlier this month at the opening of a meeting of Catholic bishops in Vatican City called the Amazon Synod. A lot of Roman Catholics are deeply troubled both about the conversations that were taking place there at this meeting and also the conclusions of that meeting, and it has raised great suspicions about the future agenda of Pope Francis himself. Joining us to talk about the Amazon Synod, Philip Lawler. He's editor of Catholic World News, author of several books, including Lost Shepherd, How Pope Francis is Misleading His Flock. Philip, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you for having me.
What exactly it was the Amazon Synod?
Well, a synod is a meeting of bishops. The Amazon Synod was a somewhat unusual meeting because it was geographically based. It was originally for the bishops of the Amazon Basin region, which covers, of course, several countries in Latin America and South America. And as with most synods, there were also a number of bishops who were appointed by the Pope to take part because of their expertise in Latin America or the Amazon, or because of their perspective as Vatican officials, or just to give the perspective of other countries into this mix. So it was a month-long meeting, or most of the month of October, and held in Rome.
How would you describe what happened at the Amazon Synod?
Well, on the one hand, I would say it was... this might sound paradoxical. On one hand, I would say it was radical. On the other hand, I would say it was predictable. It was radical because the ideas that were being tossed around at the Synod and that will likely come out of it when the work is done would represent really some substantial changes in the way the Catholic Church approaches issues, that does business. Most notably, the thing that we've talked about that got the most attention from the public was the possibility of allowing for married priests, which, of course, has not been allowed in the Roman Church, the Western Catholic Church, for many years. And also the possibility, a distant possibility, of ordaining women as deacons. But there's also a fairly radical shift in that this synod concentrated on conversion, not conversion of the people in the Amazon, but conversion of Catholics to appreciate the people in the Amazon and their culture. So it's almost a sort of reverse evangelization.
What official standing do the Synod, its pronouncements, its documents have, if any?
The Synod is an advisory body, and anything that any decisions that the Synod makes, they take effect only if ratified by the Pope. So it's the Synod exists to advise the Pope, and when the Synod is over, the Synod fathers, as they're called, the bishops who are participating, vote on a series of propositions that are then submitted to the Pope for his review. He then writes a document called an apostolic exhortation that summarizes the work of the Synod, and that's when it becomes sort of official teaching.
What is the nature of Pope Francis's involvement in the Synod? What was his involvement?
His involvement was enormous. First of all, he was there. He participated regularly in most of the sessions of the Synod, and of course, he is the Pope and people defer to him. But much more importantly, he organized it. He appointed a number of the bishops. There are bishops who are elected from the various countries participating, But then on top of that, the Pope appointed, I think it was 33 other bishops, so these are his hand-picked experts, as it were. He appointed the people who organized the synod. He appointed the people who wrote the working document preparing for the synod. And as throughout his pontificate, he had a fairly heavy hand in directing the discussions of the synod. And so when I said earlier that the outcome was predictable, it's because the deck was a little bit stacked.
So does that give us a good idea of what Pope Francis wanted the synod to say so that he could turn around and ratify it?
Yes. Simple answer, yes. I think that's accurate.
Go back to the issues that were under discussion. You had mentioned the possibility of ordaining married men, or is it allowing existing priests to marry? Which is it there?
It would be ordaining married men. The proposal was as it was introduced, the idea was that there are parts of the Amazon where people don't have access to the sacraments. Catholics don't have access to the sacraments because there are so few priests, and therefore something needs to be done to increase the number of priests. The proposal was to ordain a limited number of older men, men of proven character, as priests. So it would be men who are married being ordained. It would not be allowing priests who are already ordained to marry.
You also mentioned a female diaconate. What would that involve?
That would be, in a way, more radical. There are married priests in the Catholic Church, in the Eastern Catholic Churches today, and even in the Roman Catholic Church, there are some married priests in unusual circumstances. There are not and never have been any ordained women. So, and deacons are ordained to ministry. The idea at the Synod was to give women a greater role in the Church. And one of the proposals was to make them deacons. It remains to be seen whether the Pope is going to recommend a diaconate or merely some other sort of role that would not involve ordained ministry.
I suspect that there are those who see a female diaconate, the ordination of women to diaconal ministry, as a stepping stone toward the ordination of women to the full priesthood. Am I right?
Of course, yes. That's definitely, because, again, the diaconate is an ordained ministry, so you're on the road. You're definitely on the road. It does look like a step in that direction. You probably know Pope John Paul II has already said, as a matter of definitive teaching, that the Church can never ordain women to the priesthood.
What statements have come out of the Amazon Synod?
Well, as it concluded, the Synod participants voted on a series of propositions that, as I said, will go to the Pope, and that's the statement that came out of the Synod. It's a very lengthy document, and most of it is taken up with exhortations to care of the environment and to appreciation of the native cultures and preservation of those cultures.
You had mentioned the framing concept being conversion not of unbelievers to the Catholic Church, but of the Church to the Amazon cultures. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, that's my reading of it, of course. I mean, the statement of the Synod was about evangelization, but it did seem to me that all of the discussion was headed in that direction, more to appreciation by Catholics of the cultures of the Synod and not the other way around. And if you read the document, there aren't a whole lot of references to Jesus Christ. There are a whole lot more references to the glories of the native culture. And I think if you're a Christian missionary, understanding the native culture is a means to an end. You understand that culture in order to have a more effective way of speaking to the people of that culture and bringing the gospel to them in terms that they can understand. That's not the message that I get out of this synod. And again, I'm going to just want to be fair. That's my reading, and others would certainly disagree with me. But that's the overwhelming feeling that I had, that it was a time of insisting on our appreciation of them less than our duty as Christians in charity to bring them the message of the gospel.
As you know, especially in South America, the Roman Catholic Church has a long history of cultural accommodation. Is that essentially what's being called for, a ramping up of that practice?
That's what's being called for, but I think in a different sort of way, because it's, yes, you're absolutely right, Todd, that throughout the world and throughout her history, the Catholic Church has adapted to different cultures or made those cultures adapt to Catholicism, to Christianity, so that in Rome particularly, you see all the churches that are literally built on the ruins of pagan temples. But the difference is that in the past, it's always been a Catholic church built on the ruins of a pagan temple. That is to say, no more pagan worship is going on there. And that's the, sort of the difference that I see here, is there's not that insistence on conversion, but rather something of a one-way street in our appreciation of the native cultures and the native beliefs.
What in particular is problematic about the ordination of married men to the priesthood from a Catholic perspective?
For a couple of reasons. One is just the long history of the... It's a discipline. It's not a doctrinal issue. It's a disciplinary issue that priests are to devote themselves entirely to their people, to the service of the people and the ministry of the sacraments. And it's also, in a way, a protection of the integrity of marriage, because while there have been and still are times when Catholic men who are married have been allowed to be priests, it's never been the case that priests are allowed to marry, because a priest is, in a sense, already married to his parish and to his ministry, and it would compromise his relationship with his wife. So at a time like this, when there are so many concerns about the integrity of the Catholic priesthood, there are many of us who feel like it would be a move in the wrong direction to relax that discipline. And if there is a shortage of priests, which there undoubtedly is, maybe that's because we're not doing the right things to encourage young men towards the priesthood.
Why would a female diaconate be a problem in particular?
Well, as you said earlier, the biggest problem is probably that it would be seen by many people as preliminary to the ordination of women as priests, which isn't going to happen. It's raising false expectations. It's creating tensions, because there is already a lobby of people who want women to be ordained as priests, and they will be encouraged to push further with that. Having women engaged in greater activity in the church is no problem at all. In fact, it's a recognition of the reality in Catholic churches all over the world that women are extremely active in the church. It's the nub here, the difficulty here, is the question of sacramental ordination.
Do we have any idea how Pope Francis thinks about those two issues, about the ordination of married men and the future of a female diaconate?
As far as the ordination of married men, he seems to be sympathetic, but he has played it fairly close to the vest. On the question of a female diaconate, he has been a bit more forthcoming. There has been a commission that was studying historically the question of whether women had been ordained as deacons in the early church, and Pope Francis made a statement that his conclusion was that they were not ordained. They were called deaconesses, but the terminology, the use of different titles, was sort of fast and loose at those times. And by the time things were firmed up and clarified, it was clear that they were never ordained. So my guess, and it's only a guess, is that he would not recommend a female diaconate, although he might recommend something that sounded and looked an awful lot like it.
And then it would be a matter of nomenclature.
It would be. There would still be some of the difficulties about whether people would see this as a step towards female priesthood.
In a related story, or perhaps a related story, can you explain the controversy over the display of the Pachamama statues near the Vatican?
It was certainly related. Just before the opening of the synod, there was a ceremony in the Vatican Gardens. The Pope attended, at which the Pachamama, which is an image of an Incan fertility goddess, was venerated. And many of us as Catholics and as Christians and as having heard the Ten Commandments and knowing what a jealous God says about putting false gods before him, we're appalled by this. It looks an awful lot like idolatry to see people bowing down before an image of a fertility goddess. This same image, the Pachamama, was on display in the Synod Hall where the bishops were meeting, and a couple of similar images were on display at a church right down the street from St. Peter's Basilica and caused tremendous controversy. This seemed to symbolize perfectly and sum up the difficulty that so many of us were having with this cultural accommodation, which seemed to be going to the point of syncretism, of accepting the indigenous people's religions as equivalent to just as good as Christianity.
The statues were removed, at least some of them were removed, and thrown into the Tiber. Is that the end of the story?
No, it's not. A few days after someone came and took the statues out of the church and threw them into the river, Pope Francis announced that the police had retrieved them, fished them out of the river, and they would be back on display in the Synod Hall, which they were for the final meeting of the Synod on this past Saturday.
Some were speculating that the use of the Pachamama was merely a kind of an expression of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and another expression of that. What do you make of that statement?
Well, the people who brought the images explicitly said it was not meant to be a representation of the Virgin Mary, that it was something else, that it was representation of the native culture and of the fertility goddess and the sort of the goddess representation of the female principle and of life, these vague things, but in any case not a representation of the Virgin Mary. And of course, if you want a representation of the Virgin Mary, specifically with reference to South America, this is a very famous one of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which would have served that purpose. But, I mean, more to the point, there was an explicit denial that this was a representation of Our Lady, of the Virgin Mary.
And how would you evaluate the Pope's response? I assume that these were retrieved and put back in place under his direction.
Yes, very much so. And he apologized not for the display of these images, but for the fact that someone had taken them and thrown them in the river. So he was really upping the ante for all of the people who were very upset about it, about the display and about what looked an awful lot like idolatry. He was, in effect, increasing their sense of dismay and betrayal. It was, I can tell you, it was a very dark moment for many of us.
How would you then explain the connection between the Pachamama statues, their display and their veneration, and the Amazon Synod?
I would say that the connection is, it's almost symbolic of the whole thing, because, as I say, it was a moment of just awful dismay for me and for many of my friends and associates to think that here we have in St. Peter's Basilica, right at the central place of the Catholic Church, a display of what looks like a pagan statue, and we're being asked to treat it with the same sort of veneration that we treat images of the Blessed Virgin or even of the cross. And it seemed to be the same sort of indifferentism towards the faith, the same that we were hearing in echoes of the Synod message, the same sort of idea that we're not called to convert the world, but we're called to be converted by the world.
Finally, you have written this book, Lost Shepherd, How Pope Francis is Misleading His Flock. How would you summarize that misleading?
The theme of that book, which I knew to be controversial, but I think it's borne up in the last couple of years, is that Pope Francis has been issuing statements that are confusing, consistently confusing. And after studying these statements, because that's my daily work, to bring news from the Vatican, I very reluctantly reached the conclusion that it's intentional, that the Pope's game plan, if you will, is to leave enough confusion, enough wiggle room almost, so that people who don't hold the teachings of the Catholic Church, who challenge the teachings of the Catholic Church, can still function within the Catholic Church and thus sort of water down the faith, the beliefs that we've been handed down through the ages.
Philip Lawler is editor of Catholic World News, author of several books, including Lost Shepherd, How Pope Francis is Misleading His Flock. You'll find a link to this book and to Catholic World News at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Philip, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Reformation Week continues, and our series, Paths to Lutheranism, we're going to talk about a very interesting path from Methodism and Pentecostalism, with a few zigzags on the way to confessional Lutheranism and even in confessional Lutheranism. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest. He's host of a forthcoming podcast called The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, produced by Lutheran Public Radio. Starts tomorrow, by the way. When we come back, we'll hear about his path to Lutheranism.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.